Did somebody say snapped pod? Hello everyone and welcome to season 2 of Snapped. As usual, we are your hosts. I'm Pete.
And I'm Paul.
And once again, this is your weekly dissection of music's greatest hits, hidden gems, and cultural resets. Each week, we dive deep into a different album to try and convince you that they truly snapped. Now, at the end of season 1, we left you on a fluffy pink cotton candy cliffhanger. So this week, we are very much feeling like a plastic bag as we delight in Katy Perry's sophomore smash, Teenage Dream.
Wig, okay.
Wig, did you just say wig?
Yes.
Okay, so let's dive straight into the nitty-gritty. Teenage Dream is the second mainstream studio album by Katy Perry. It was released on August 24th, 2010 in the United States, Canada and Mexico, and on August 30th, 2010 for the rest of the world. Why do we have to wait 6 more days for this?
I know, can you imagine that in the streaming age, you have to wait a week while they're all bopping to it, and then we just have to sit and wait for the physical CD to ship?
Never be me. I'd be on LimeWire.com and I'd be downloading. So prior to the album, Katy discussed with Rolling Stone regarding her plans for the album, stating that she did not want to alienate her fan base. Now, love the pun. Queen of cringy puns. She says, "The second record is really important to me because I think it shows whether I'm meant to do this or if I got lucky. Basically, what I want to do is not alienate the audience that I have at all."
And I think we know from Pop Girls that the second album is where you have to make or break your career.
For sure. Like, as we talked about on the very last episode of season 1, Dua really pierced into the upper echelons of pop culture with Future Nostalgia. And I think Katy proved the mold here.
Mm-hmm. Now, before the official album title was released, the name of the album was thought to be Summer Starts Now, since Perry said the line during a press conference with the addition of several advertisements for the upcoming album. She said the album was art and that everyone needs a little art in their lives. Very Gaga of her.
Mm-hmm.
She's quoted as saying the album booklet will stink with the smell of cotton candy and the artwork wouldn't have any Katy Perry logos on it because she wanted to keep it the way it is, a piece of art. What are your thoughts on the cover, Paul? Did you ever smell it?
Okay, let me just run to the attic because I actually have it up there, and if it doesn't smell like mold, it might still smell like cotton candy.
A few minutes later.
Oh my goodness, guys, the sounds in the background is actually Paul pulling the attic down live in the Quinn Devlin household to go and get this album. So stay tuned.
1 hour later.
When you're running low, there's only one place to go. And I want acai. Yeah, 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 when I'm ordering delivery.
2 hours later.
A different dimension. You open my eyes. And I'm ready to go, lead me into the light. Light.
1 eternity later.
After a lot of rooting around, we find her.
She's in the room with us.
Okay, I'm going to pass it over. You're going to take a whiff. You're going to tell me what it smells like.
Uh-huh.
Does it smell like cotton candy? Does it smell yummelish? Or does it smell like dust?
Okay. It smells like a sticker.
Here's a little sticker.
Oh, great. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and they're scented, too.
I.
They smell like a sticker.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah.
It smells like cotton candy.
No, it actually does. Still smell like cotton candy. I don't know when you purchased this CD.
August 30th, 2010. I was like bursting down the doors of HMV when they were opening. I like assaulted the man, grabbed the smelliest one. I sniffed them all.
You are a smell queen.
Yeah. So the album cover itself is just pop culture. Everybody knows it. She's on a pink cotton candy cloud. She's laying naked. There's a little strip going over her bum. Very PG. And it's just very ethereal. It's very like idealistic. It's very happy to me. Like it's very upbeat, positive. Like your head's in the clouds. You're just full of dreams.
Yeah, it's very much like she saw her music was categorized as bubblegum pop. And she's like, thank you for that free idea.
Right, right. And I think that compared to one of the boys' album cover, which is just her sitting in like a back garden somewhere, I think it's a lot more high concept. It has a very particular point of view. And I really love the fact that she doesn't have the album title on here, she doesn't have her name on here. A lot of people are doing that now, but that wasn't really the norm. back in 2010. I mean, we have Gaga doing it with Chromatica. Miley's doing it with her new album as well. It's really like avant-garde, more high concept, and I think she really nails it with this iconic image. The back cover, though, with all the tracks on it, is not as aesthetically pleasing at all. All the O's, like in California Girls or in Peacock or Firework, they're all little peppermints, but it looks so tacky. Like, whoever picked the font needs fired. And thank God they didn't touch the front.
Okay, so we know the front cover is iconic. We know the back cover isn't iconic, but what's in between those?
We've got the singles.
So let's get into it. The album's lead single is California Girls. Girls.
With a U.
This is a triple platinum song and features the rapper Snoop Dogg. Released on May 11th, 2010, the song spent 6 weeks at the number one position on the Billboard Hot 100 and in countries worldwide, including New Zealand, Canada, and here in Ireland and the UK. It has achieved over 5,800,000 sales in the US alone and was the best-selling digital song of 2010. So this is like the era where we're still doing physical media, but I think we're starting to push for iTunes, and like specifically iTunes sales.
Yeah, iTunes is really dominating the music industry. It is where you release all your singles, you release music videos on there too. People pay for music videos in this age.
Like us.
Me.
So Perry stated during a Rolling Stone photo shoot that this song is meant to be a response to Jay-Z and Alicia Keys' Empire State of Mind.
Nobody says that, but yes.
She was like, what else has a location?
Right. No, she just says, there's another city in the world. Like, literally.
So she says, everyone has the New York song. But what the fuck? What about LA? What about California? It's been a minute since we had a California song. And especially from a girl's perspective. We took the reference of Prince, which is always a great reference, and some of the 90s, almost house music references. Now, I can say with my whole chest that I don't get any of those references from this song. Maybe 90s, a bit.
I don't get any of these references. Maybe she means like 90s as in like, it was in the charts for 90 weeks. I don't understand. I'm trying to make it fit. It doesn't make sense. Almost house music references. And California Girls.
I quite like that she thinks that people from LA and California are underrepresented in media when they're literally the entirety of media.
Yeah.
Anyway, the song was initially titled California Girls with an I, but Perry changed the spelling to California Girls at the request of her manager in tribute to Big Star, which had recently lost one of its members, as a reference to their song September Girls with a U. Which is so strange, but they also wanted it not to be confused with the surf classic by the Beach Boys.
I feel like she almost wanted to put a Z at the end of California Girls as well. Like, that's Katie for me. She's a bit cringe.
I really like Snoop Dogg's verse, and I feel like Snoop Dogg is for the gays and girls a bit.
I agree with them when he like metamorphosized into Snoop Lion. That feels straight to me.
So basically, when Snoop Dogg isn't available for the performance...
Can I ask if he was ever available?
Probably... On one show, Jimmy Kimmel Live or something.
I don't think he even did the Super Bowl. No. I know he didn't even do the Super Bowl, so I'm sure he didn't show up to Seth Meyers on Thursday night.
I just find this really rancid rating of when Kitty performs it by herself from her own fandom wiki page. So they're really reading Mother, but they say Perry performs the song without his rap verse at the bridge and instead has an instrumental section. The bridge corrects a problem which was present in her early songs when sung live. She tends to sing her songs with so much passion that she barely avoids running out of breath and doesn't allow herself enough time to swallow her saliva, which is an artistic choice that gives the song an intimate personal feel. But in songs without an instrumental bridge, it will eventually sound slushy. Now, they really said, let's drag Mother of the House, saying she can't control her breath. And
she holds on to her saliva.
She's so wet in her mouth that is an artistic choice, to be fair.
She said, hold on, saliva, you're staying here.
It was a premonition of tsunami from Witness. But I was just reading up on her live performances, and I was like, wow, a kitty cat wrote that.
Do you think there's going to be a new song on her new album called Saliva in the Mouth featuring Lana Del Rey?
Please, too
early. To the tune of Snow at the Beach.
Saliva in the mouth. Weird, but an artistic choice. B- back to this Hot 100 number one single, which is hard to get. Not everybody has that. A music video was released for the song on June 15th, 2010. In the music video, Perry is a game piece in Candyfornia. Very inspired, obviously, by Candyland, Willy Wonka, Alice in Wonderland. But I will say, this is so iconic in your mind.
Don't watch it again. Like, you think, oh my God, she's got the, like, whipped cream titties and she's spraying everywhere and Snoop Dogg's there. But when you actually watch it, it's like Avengers Endgame. Katie's collecting other game pieces who haven't made it to the end. And then she's warring against Snoop Dogg to be freed from the game against his army of gummy bears.
Yeah, so Snoop has, it's almost like in the death zone. He has trapped some girls in jello, in a bubblegum bubble, and Katie is popping. She is splitting the jelly. She's rescuing these women in need. It kind of represents young gay people.
Yeah, and underrepresented Californians.
Yeah. Who are all in this Candyland mousetrap, and she's going, come on, girls. At one point, they dress up like Girl Scouts. Mid-adventure.
And then abuse and cannibalize a gingerbread man.
Yeah, they eat his eye or something, don't they?
They eat his eye.
Is that why the witness cover has an eye in her mouth?
Yeah, that's the gingerbread man's eye. She kept it with the saliva in her mouth as well. There was too much saliva, it pushed the eye right back out.
She kept the eye moist with the amount of saliva. That's why she has to keep so much saliva.
Right, we're getting away from the topic. The music video is not that good.
Yeah, and her wigs are out of the bag. Not a tease. Not a steamer.
Not even a breeze. Like, to naturally do it.
But she is serving versatility in the colours, the outfits. But they're all very cheap.
It's not aged that well, production value-wise.
Yes, but I guess she didn't know it was going to be that big, but
it still is, like, I still do think about it. It still has, like, lasted 13 years of culture, more than really any of her other visuals ever have. So I gotta give it credit for that. But let's talk about the song, because the song is an amazing first single. It's such an earworm. It doesn't go old.
I really think that the music video does give a nostalgia aspect to me, like, especially when you're saying about the whipped cream titties. Like, you can see it when you're listening to the song.
And that's what the best music videos do. They create a specific moment that you always think about in your mind. And I think Katie, more than anybody, probably other than Gaga, has the best music video moments. And Madonna, obviously, but of this age.
Mm-hmm. And Katie doesn't stop there, because the singles do not stop charting, do not stop slapping.
That's right. And the second single, the titular track Teenage Dream, comes out second. And it impacts the radio July 22nd of 2010, right after the music video comes out for California Girls as well. Debuts at number 20 in the Billboard Hot 100. So not as strong, but does climb all the way up to number one on the chart for two consecutive weeks. It also landed at number two in the UK here as well. And it marked Katy Perry's third number one. It peaked at number one in Ireland, Estonia. She's got a lot of fans there. New Zealand, Scotland, who've got their own charts. Slovakia, and oh, this is the Eurovision. And other subcharts in the US. It has sold over 4.7 million digital copies as of January 2015.
Isn't it crazy that she gave us 1 week? She was like, enjoy the music video for California Girls for 1 week, and now we're going into the next single.
Yeah, she doesn't mess about it. Like, she really has a strong momentum going into this album.
Like, the girls nowadays release a song in May and then don't release the album until January.
I also really want to quickly say here, I respect the fact that she's only got two singles out before the album comes out. She leaves us a lot of new material to listen to when the album does eventually drop. And when discussing Teenage Dream, Katie says the song is about recapturing the dizzying, thrilling feeling of first love. She says, when you're growing up and you're falling in love for the first time, it's such an amazing feeling that sometimes you can't recycle again later on in your life. For me, being in love again now, it's kind of the same feeling. So she's contracted herself there completely.
In one sentence.
Yeah, in the next breath. Will say, though, for me, this song is so beautiful. One of my favorite songs of all time. Mm-hmm. I think it does capture that feeling of, like, wistful, falling in love. I think it does it so well because the first verse really is very mellow, but you're, like, kind of unintentionally and unknowingly sort of falling for the person. And then the chorus just hits hard with a gut punchy, mm-hmm. sort of full of heart way. And I just feel like it is a beautiful love song. Katie, for me, does sometimes tend to do, like, love songs that are sad and ballady, to hear her do it this way and a bit more upbeat and joyous and euphoric, I think suits her better.
And I feel it does sound so different to that, but is then counteracted by her doing the most cookie cutter music video for, I'm not going to say the song is nuanced, but it is a different sound for her.
Right, so we talked about all the iconic imagery from California Girls. If I pointed a gun at your head and said, tell me a still frame from this music video, I think most people would struggle.
It would be sepia tones and no lip.
The colour scheme is very muted. It's very Ariana Grande Into You before that became a thing.
Yes.
It's very like, we're going to run away, but our friends are there to celebrate. Katie says that they're like her real life friends and she shot it in her hometown. I love all of that, but the music video is a bit of a snore in comparison to the song, which I think is so upbeat, bright. I think bright when I hear the song. And then the music video is so dull visually.
I think it is a strange choice, especially in the era where we're still on MTV. So when the song is getting hits, it's being the music video is being played and people know the music videos associated to songs. Like nowadays, a music video comes out and you don't really see it or interact with it unless you're a fan of that person. Like, you don't accidentally see a music video.
You have to seek it out yourself. That's mm-hmm. such a good point as well.
So at this point, the album's out and Katie knows within 2 months that Firework is going to be her song. I feel like it is her song. Like, if you were to categorize a pop girl by a song.
Firework always goes off. It doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. Everybody's just like,
yeah, like, this is the last song that she does at the Super Bowl. For me, if I think about, like, what anybody's big song is, that's what I would put it at. Mm-hmm. The last song.
So Firework is confirmed as the third lead single released by Billboard, with Katy Perry saying in an interview that Firework will be a defining single, and that was true.
She spilled.
The single was officially released on October 26, 2010, which is strange. It feels like such a summer song, and she released it on Halloween, pretty much.
Oh, because you shoot off fireworks at Halloween. That's her brain.
Oh, she was like, go down to the guns and fireworks shop.
Yeah, this is for the streets.
And in the UK, it was digitally released on November 2nd. So she was like, bonfire night for you.
Yeah.
Halloween for us.
Yeah.
When asked about the song, Perry stated, I hope this could be one of those things where it's like, yeah, I want to put my fist up and feel proud and feel strong. But I also don't want it to be cheesy. It's a fine line. And I think Firework would be like the opus or my one song if I had to pick a song to play. Because it's got a great beat. But it also has a fantastic message.
All these little sound clips from her, I'm like, how did you write all these songs that are so nuanced? And then
I'm obsessed with her interview. She's just saying words.
It's very Ashley Tisdale. She's like, what's the next thing I can say? I get when you like try to write a sentence on your phone and you press the middle button to see like what's next. That's what it feels like to me.
I feel like Ashley just didn't care about her music, whereas I think Katie does, but she is like, it's amazing, but it's also quite bad. Like, she just like gives both sides of it. She's like, it's really cheesy, but it's actually really serious. And like, that doesn't make sense.
It also is really cheesy. Like, the song is really cheesy. It literally starts with the opening line, do you ever feel like a plastic bag floating through the wind?
But she delivers it like stoically.
Oh, it's the conviction.
She's genuinely, she's your therapist. Do you ever feel like you're a plastic bag?
And I kind of do.
I think we've all felt like a plastic bag.
Every single Sunday night before I go to bed, I get so stressed about work. I'm like, I'm a plastic bag floating through life. Like, where am I going to land?
Are you a bag for life?
25p bag for life. I'm strong.
Oh, like, no, I'm a 5p. Like when you get the Chinese, like the clear white bag.
One gust of wind, you're gone.
Yeah, I'm away.
You're gone.
Sadly, the music video does not contain a single plastic bag. So the music video is a part of a cross-promotional deal with the European telecommunications group, Deutsche Telekom, who hosted a series of activities and competitions from which fans around Europe were recruited to be in the video. This video is not good, again. I love how Paul said all of them are good, but we've slated every single one. But, like, they're good in a way.
Again, I do think about this music video. Like, she's replaced the, like, frost tips on her titties with fireworks, which feels dangerous, but inspirational.
The music video is very much giving Sensate with multiple players around the globe all connecting over Katy Perry standing in a balcony shooting fireworks out of her tits. So the music video begins with Perry gazing down at the city from a balcony, observing two parents quarreling with their son. So she has x-ray vision into people's apartments.
Yep.
She's almost like God of it. Like, I feel like that is, she's looking at you being like, you're a firework, but you don't know it yet. So she sees two parents quarreling with their son. an overweight, shy girl observing a pool party and a cancer patient in a hospital room. Without a second thought, Perry's like, let me shoot out some fireworks into the city. Then, in a different location with a character that hasn't been introduced, two teenage boys are shown sharing a kiss in the middle of a party. You're so gay and you don't even like boys. Ofcom did allegedly pixelate this in the UK, but it did happen.
Yeah,
it's on YouTube. For literally a millisecond.
It's crazy to me.
Fireworks begin igniting from the chests of the overweight girl and makes her enjoy the pool party.
She's really, I really hate the description that she's overweight.
I didn't write this.
No, I know you didn't, but like, I know that Katie said, right, I need a gay, I need a fat girl, I need a magician.
Fireworks also ignite from the chest of the quarreling boy, who then turns and pushes his father. And then for some reason, so everyone gets the power to be themselves and be brave. And then the cancer patient just sees another woman have a baby. Then another new character enters the fray when a magician was walking home when three teenagers tried to rob him, but then birds flew out of him and he showed them a trick while the fireworks burst out from his chest. Now we don't know what actually happened to the magician in the end.
He got shot. Like, he definitely got shot.
She's dead.
Like, if I'm gonna rob somebody and then they pull out doves, I'm like, well, they're getting shot. Like, I'm still taking the money. What are the doves gonna do, fight me?
It's just so bizarre. And Katie's outfit is so ugly in the, like, the final act. Where
there was no budget this time around.
She's jumping around in a George at Asda gown/flowy top. The single is currently Perry's most praised and biggest selling song yet. The song has sold over 7,309,000 digital downloads, which is the second highest amount ever sold by a female artist, and the fourth overall in that list. It peaked at number one in the US, but surprisingly peaked at number three in the UK single charts, which I don't know who is blocking these girls in history from the top spot, but like, to be blocked by two songs were bigger in the UK than Firework.
That's crazy to me. It really was all over MTV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next single's actually been through quite a journey in its life cycle. E.T. was actually first released on August 17th, 2010, as a promotional single being released through iTunes. However, it leaked as a demo called Futuristic Lover back in May 2010, well before the album was actually even announced. I remember downloading it illegally. I did.
Siren noises in post.
No! And I instantly thought it was one of the best songs I'd ever heard in my life. Like,
does it sound like the song actually sounds? Is it, or how different is the demo?
It's really similar. I think there are a few words changed, but that's the height of it. It's really similar. And it gave me the vibes when Bad Romance leaked as well. That like, oh, this is going to be a big, big song. And E.T. kind of was. It was released worldwide as the fourth single on February 16th, 2011, and there was a bit of contention whether it would be Peacock that would be released or E.T., but obviously she went for that. And for its single release, the song was remixed to feature new verses from known enemy of the pod, Kanye West.
I can't believe that there are people that would do something like this. It's so sick and twisted.
And I want to say, okay, I hate Kanye West. Sorry, I'm going to go out and say, I really hate Kanye West. This is the best thing he's ever done.
True.
These verses, like the opening bit and also the bridge of the song, are amazing with him on it. Like, she doesn't even cut her bridge out. She kind of like extends it to put his bit on. And like the auto tune and like how it sounds so outer spacey adds a lot to the song for me.
I love when an artist who's featured doesn't just do their verse at the start or doesn't just have their certain bit. Like, I do like when someone comes back for the bridge or comes back to harmonize in the chorus. I think it really adds something rather than just like, oh, I sent you this on like voice recording on my iPhone and then add it to your song.
It feels like a proper duet. The song itself is all about Katie comparing her lover to an extraterrestrial. They're mysterious, they're mystifying, and they're a bit unique. And she's trying to understand them and sort of seeing like, oh, well, you don't fit in my normal boxes, but the beat and the sound and her vocals on it are just brilliant. I think the song sounds utter spacey. I think that's a big tick.
And when you think of like famous bridges, you think of Brooklyn Bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, and the bridge in E.T.
It's so good. The music video features both Katy Perry and Kanye West and was released in March of 2011. And it's really good. Like, she's been jettisoned from like an escape pod.
Airlock decompression completed. Jettison
She's in Gravity with Sandra Bullock. She's like in space. She has no oxygen, but she's sort of like an alien herself. And she meets and uncovers this robot on another planet that she falls in love with. And then they turn into like humanoid. She reveals she's like half fawn at the bottom. And then they're both just naked and they walk into the sunset together.
Is it canon that Kanye is the one that jettisons the woman on the rise with a good music career into space by herself?
Yeah.
History repeats itself. Swish, swish.
I know Katie and Taylor really should never have fallen out, but...
I really think these are some really bold looks in the music video as well, with the amount of like SFX, and she's really like spinning around in the black hole in space. I think she really wanted to tick off, and I think we'll see this in the rest of the music videos, all the genres. She wanted to do everything. She didn't want to be the California Girls girl who dresses up in a pink wig. She wanted to give us blockbuster movies.
I do agree with that, and they're different. Yeah, they're different genres, definitely. The CGI is significantly better in this than it is in California Girls. The outfits are much better. If in the UK they didn't blur their bum cheeks but were blurring men kissing, that's a different issue, but that's not Katie's fault.
Yarmy Denzel table dupes, keepy duke me my shoes, hipsy kiki waka whoop.
Not stopping for a breath, Katie then releases Last Friday Night, in brackets TGIF, which was released on June 6th, 2011 as the fifth single from the album. The song received a commercial success, peaking at number one again in Canada, Slovakia, and the US Billboard Hot 100 for two consecutive weeks. Perry called it her Waking Up in Vegas 2, which is a bop from her first album. And she says, it's just kind of about those moments where you swear to God you're never going to mix Jaeger and lemon drop shots ever again, because you feel like crap and then you do it all over again the next week. The music video was released worldwide on June 14th, 2011, and the impacts of the video are still felt now because it shook pop culture.
Yeah, she really gathers like the Infinity Stones of Gaydom at the time. So she grabs that guy we all like from Glee, Darren Criss, who plays Blaine, who coincidentally does a cover of Teenage Dream that's really famous from that show as well. Kevin McHale, who's already from Glee.
Mm-hmm. Kenny G on the sax.
The straight needs to get something in this. And then also Rebecca Black, the Friday girl on Last Friday Night.
I really was saying when we were watching this music video that Katie really threw her a lifeline here, because Friday was massive for Rebecca Black. And obviously Rebecca Black went on to do bigger and better things. But at this point, she was the joke, the meme. It was fun to hate her. And Katie was like, you know what? No, come in and you can be the cool girl in my music video where I'm the little nerdy girl.
I love her for doing that. I really think that's such an amazing gesture from her. Gives her a do-over to do that little piece of history again. And I really respect that.
In the music video, Perry plays a nerdy little girl called Kathy Beth Terry. She would then go on in classic Katie fashion to release some more clips playing that character for the promotion. And then after crossing 500,000 likes, she released an interview with Digital Spy as the character Kathy Beth Terry, which I think she would do today.
Yeah, I think when she looks back at her entire music video history, this is probably her most fun. This feels the most like, oh, what it feels like to go out and have a rager and have a lot of fun, kiss random boys that you find attractive, or drink and have a good time and make a mess and then wake up hungover. It does feel so authentically joyous.
Yeah, and I really respect that about her, is that I don't think she could look back at one of her eras and be like, oh, that's cringy. Maybe her Christian era, but other than that.
They all feel authentically her, I think is what you're saying, and I agree. I feel her presence all over this. Mm-hmm. She doesn't feel like a music executive said, okay, well, let's do a big house party and we'll get all these celebrities involved. I think Katie selected this idea and then selected the people she wanted to be involved in. And for me to succeed at this level and be so involved in it, I have to respect that.
She also released a remix version of TGIF with Missy Elliott and made it available for 69 cents on the iTunes store. So she's trying to be quirky.
She's trying to get that number one. That's what the girls do when they're trying to get to the top of the charts. They're like, it's 59p for this week only. I'm like, it's the first week that it's out. Are you not embarrassed? But the Missy Elliott version's really good as well. Like, she's coming off the back of getting a really good feature from Snoop Dogg, a really strong feature from Kanye West, and an even better feature from Missy here. I actually think of this version when I think of the song.
Mm-hmm.
In my like Mandela effect, she's in the music video.
I thought she was in the music video, yeah.
Strange. It's that impactful for me.
Well, it worked because on August 17th, 2011, Last Friday Night gave Katy Perry the title of the only woman in the 53-year history of Billboard to have five songs from the same album at number one on the Hot 100.
That's amazing.
These days, girls can barely get a song to chart for more than a week before it falls off.
Yeah, she's consistent.
That's five over pretty much a year that all stayed.
She built up a really strong era here. Uh-huh.
The single itself has sold over 3,700,000 digital copies in the US alone. And again, the UK hands did not care for Last Friday Night, and it only achieved number 9 in the UK charts. I don't know what was going on. Maybe people were just against her for being everywhere.
You know, you walk out the door, you see someone that you know, and they ask you how you are, and you just have to say that you're fine when you're not really fine.
I really don't know. I don't know whether part of it is the fact that, like, if you bought the album nearly a year ago, why would you really buy the song when you already have it?
Yeah.
It's almost weird to re-buy a single. I think that's why we've moved away from this era. A lot of the people, I think in the UK specifically, don't have that many stans. You know, Kitty Cats in America were clearly watching the music video and buying the song just to push it to the top of the charts. But I think the UK girls are like, let me save that coin.
Yeah.
And we're finally at the last single from the standard edition of this album. We have The One That Got Away, which was released as the sixth single from the album. It has been seen as an attempt at beating out Michael Jackson's record for the most number ones on the Billboard Hot 100 from a single album. But this goal has been confirmed not to be the reason for the song's single release. I would agree, because I wouldn't have picked it if I wanted to get number one with it.
No.
Katy had previously hinted about the song Hummingbird Heartbeat, which is amazing, but not a good single choice. So she kind of did a good job there, with fans speculating that either this song or Peacock will be the sixth single. Quickly, just to give my opinion, Peacock would have been a better single. I think it probably would have got number one, but I do respect her because she picked something that was more personal and special to her versus I Want to See Your Peacock.
I think people would have jumped on it, like Mums, Angry Mums, Mumsnet.
Now, do you know what a MILF is?
We'll be like, she's talking about cock, I'm not taking my child to see her.
I guess. No, I do see that. I just feel like with the bums in the ET music video and like,
oh yeah, and she's talking about drinking and she's talking about sex pretty much. But I think it's so explicit that it would be a free outrage and no one wants the bad press when you're trying to beat Michael Jackson's record.
Yeah, and I don't know what the clean version would sound like. I want to see your
peanut.
But then all the like not allergists would get up in arms. You can't win.
I want to see your peanut.
Animal Rights Corporation. Anyway, on November 24th of 2011, the single entered the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100, making it one of only 7 albums in US history to have 6 or more top 10 singles. Okay, everybody, put your hand up if you knew that she released a remix of this song to attempt to get number one and then put B.O.B. What's your name, B.O.B.? So they calling you Bob? It peaked at number 3. I don't think because of B.O.B. I didn't actually know there was a... Like, I loved Katy in this era. I did not know there was a remix of this till today.
Is it on Spotify?
I had to search a long time.
Did you find it?
Yes, it's awful. You sneak me in your mom's house. I know I might have spilled
my drink, but really want to try to spill my heart out. I've never heard that in my life.
I don't want to hear it again. It's really, really bad. It takes away all of the emotion, the heart of the song for me that really is very introspective, very personal. It seems like a solo song.
Also, you're literally put in the position of her memory by starting with Summer After High School. You're like, she's from the first breath is telling you when this is set, what she's thinking. And then instead there's B.O.B. calling you Bob.
I also feel like it is a sequel in a way to Teenage Dream, or could be like what would happen if that relationship fell apart. Like it could be a two-sided coin. I like that. In the song itself, Katy reminisces about a former lover. She promises him that if only things had worked out differently, they could have spent their life together. And years later, during her live stream for the release of her 2017 album Witness, Katy revealed the track is about Josh Groban during a game of Spill Your Guts or Fill Your Guts with James Corden.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Josh Groban is? And we'll put a bit of audio from when Andy Cohen talks about it with him on Watch What Happens Live, because it's just a bit awkward. Like, they're really shipping him and Katy together, and Josh is like, oh, like we're both happily taken.
Katy Perry said you're the one that got away on her live stream.
Yeah, she was doing a live stream.
Did you two date? And I didn't realize it.
Well, you know, we did, and you know, we were both very private, and so we realized we were better as friends, and we've been very, very good friends to this day. She's the best. And then I listened to the lyrics of the song, and I'm just like, oh no, I never owned a Mustang. I don't have a tattoo. Are you sure that's about me?
Call Josh.
Oh no, right. We're both. I think we're both very taken at the moment. So.
And in the music video, she's Granny Mash. She's like, got.
She's Elliot with two T's.
She's Elliot with two T's and a bad hip. Like she, she's got this prosthetic on. She's like in a really nice mansion, and then it flashes back to all of her love when she's putting on like a wee mustache, and like people used to do on Tumblr. And she's in love with this boy who actually does look a bit like Josh Groban. So yeah, like she casts him well. Then they're fighting, like he's an artist. She throws a bit of paint on one of his like
Masterpieces.
And then he leaves in the middle of the night. And then in the middle of the day, he's just driving down a road. There's like the biggest rock I've ever seen in my life in the middle of the road. And he flies over the edge of the cliff and then dies.
I think Katie is serving camp in this video, but also emotion.
It's a really good music video.
Her as the Granny Mush, she's giving emotion. She doesn't say a word.
But there's a part in the music video where she's on the bed as Granny Mush. And then she enters as young Catherine, Miss Katie, sits in the bed, and then they sing back and forth. I think that's nice. Not number one though, sorry Katie.
Your flop era is low-key serving. What the fuck does that mean?
You thought the singles were over? They're not over.
She's like Davina McCall.
Hey, fancy another one? Do you want another one?
Katie said, do another one to the veteran community and released Part of Me, which is off the repackage of Teenage Dream called Teenage Dream The Complete Confection.
It smells like nothing. There's no smell.
I think that's disgraceful. It just smells like ice cream. Vanilla. On February 13th, 2012, Part of Me received an official release as the lead single from the album's repackaging.
And I'm just noticing, as you say that, that that's one day before Valentine's Day. And this is all about the breakup with Russell Brand. That's camp. And she went to army camp.
The forever philanthropic Katie announced that all profits raised from the sale of the single will be donated to Music Cares, a non-profit which helps musicians to have a place to turn to in times of financial, personal or medical crisis. I'm surprised she didn't make it to the army, considering she's, or the Marines, but anyway. The day before its premiere, the final reworked version with new lines and structure leaked onto the internet. The official released version features minor lyric changes to the bridge, with the new lyrics being in response to Perry's recent divorce from Russell Brand, and replaces the line, "You can keep the dog for me, I never liked him anyway," to, "So you can keep the diamond ring, it meant nothing anyway."
Bon appetit!
The lyrics were initially addressed to her ex-boyfriend, Travis McCoy.
He's called us on the Saturdays.
Okay. Whatever that means.
Perry had actually planned all along to release the song on the deluxe edition of the album rather than the original, as she said it didn't fit the album's composition.
Take your Sims from unknown to unforgettable as a singer.
Well, she was doing promo for The Sims because for The Sims 3 Showtime, Perry shot a 30-second video where she sang Part of Me, which featured on The Sims YouTube page, which is a big accolade in 2012.
I would love to hear her in Simlish. Schnee noodle noodle she. That was good, right?
That was deep, actually.
I'm a Simlish girl. I'm bilingual.
So she began filming the official music video for Part of Me in early 2012, taking place at the USMC's Marine Corps base camp in California, which is underrepresented for Marines.
Yeah, true. They're the like least represented Marines in the all of United States.
So basically, Katie turns up to her soon-to-be ex-boyfriend's work, where he kisses another girl on the cheek in front of a ground floor glass office room.
Yeah, it's definitely like workplace sexual assault. And then she wakes up with him because of it, and that's important.
So she then, off the back of this, goes to get a little snack, a little drink, and then she sees on the wall, all women are created equal, and then they become Marines. So she said, fuck that, went into the bathroom and took a leaf out of The One That Got Away's book and give herself a choppy B.O.B.
Oh my god, that was awful.
She chops all her hair off, gives herself a choppy bob, then immediately goes and says, you know what, I'm going to Marine Corps.
Love it. I will say, I do detest this music video, but Katie doing all these like stunts like she's on Ninja Warrior, going up and down this rope. Like
she's on Takeshi's Castle.
She got to the final round in little like
dodge
and little like dodge them shooting at each other. She lost because no one ever wins, but she did a good job.
She's literally going for it, and then the video ends with the final transformation into her like warrior woman, clad in camouflage utilities, body armor, and face paint.
It's very Mulan to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like a strong woman. Like, I don't know, like the scene in Mulan where she's like cutting off all her hair. Like, I feel like that's a motif here. I like what she tries to do. The execution just isn't my taste. But I mean, I think this comes in the era where like people's boyfriends, husbands going off to war and then coming back is so romantic in all these songs.
Mm-hmm.
So Katie's spinning that on its head and saying, I don't need to be the one waiting at home for a man. I can go out and do it for myself. Claps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, applause, 2013 clapping for her. But otherwise, not for me. What is for me, though, is the very last single from the Teenage Dream Complete Confection. It is the 8th single, Wide Awake. So according to Katie, Wide Awake was inspired by major life changes, including her divorce from actor, comedian, and very smelly man, Russell Brand.
Oh, that gave me... What do you call that?
A stitch?
A stitch.
Lilo! He's so smelly looking.
I am Jasmine Masters, and I have something to say. Baby, your ass thinking.
In an interview with MTV News, Katie reveals, well, this song, I have a lot of different emotions and feelings in all my songs. This song in particular is a dose of reality. It's kind of like coming down from a high. You've been on cloud nine for so long, and it can't always be so sweet, and sometimes you need to realize that. And you have to pick yourself up and move forward and face the facts of life, and know this is just a lesson you learn, and you're stronger because of it. It achieved number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100, and again, her famous number 9 on the UK singles chart. And I really want to, like, first, he said that the music video for this song is...
The Descendants.
It's The Descendants 4. Like, it's really Disney-fied. But I really love the start of it in that she, like, is on the album cover, like, on the cloud with the wrong wig. And then she, like, basically comes off the set of Teenage Dream, leaving behind that idealistic life of being in love, being, as she says, her head in the clouds, and then right back to reality. And sort of facing the demons and the depression that she's really feeling at her core here. It's very vulnerable. And then after that, she meets, like, a young version of herself in a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm. She was streaming Labyrinth.
By Taylor.
Yeah.
It was a mind maze.
It wasn't my maze.
She's a self-referential queen. She went back in time multiple times and did that.
She stepped on a butterfly and it changed the colour of her wig from the California Girls video.
That's why that girl gives her the butterfly.
That girl, it's her, it's Catherine.
Do you think the music video is a bit annoying when, like, it's very clear that the little girl that she's found is herself? She literally sees her in the mirror. And then at the very end, the little girl runs away and hops on a bike with a massive sign on it that says Catherine. I don't really think of the music video, but the song is really strong. I'm glad she went out on a high at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Am I supposed to be impressed?
Well, after that marathon of singles, we actually have to have a moment of silence. And that is a moment of silence for the snapped or flopped section.
No! You stay with me! You stay with me!
Oh, she died?
Oh, she passed away? We're actually replacing this section of the podcast with a new and improved section that we like to call Slipped on or
chopped off. We really wanted to cut the fat because a lot of the snaps were rightfully picked as singles from the album. You know, the singers know what their best songs are. We wanted to shine a light on songs that maybe didn't get enough love, we don't see an awful lot, and maybe are a bit underrated, and then also do the difficult job of chopping one song from the album.
With an album that's so chock full of iconic songs, you would think it would be hard to find a song that is slept on, but I don't actually think a lot of people know the track Deep Cuts from this album. There are a lot of good songs in this album. I really think it is a very strong offering for a sophomore album. But when thinking about this section in particular, we unanimously agreed that Circle the Drain is our very first recipient of the Slept On.
We will respect her.
It's really good. It's such a different feel for the rest of the album. So I get why maybe it doesn't stick out to a lot of people as, like, something from this album. But it's very You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette inspired. It's got a huge influence on her, alongside hints to her former drug addicted boyfriend, Travis McCoy. And I think I really like it because it does show some of the edge and rock elements that were in the first album. It's not all bubblegum pop. In Candyfornia, there is a bit of turbulence. And I think this song does break up the album really well.
When researching this song, I found an incredible interview where Katie is defending why she swears in this song, and I just want to play it because it's amazing.
It's a little edgy because I think it has the F word a few times, but it's very appropriate to say the F word when the F word is needed.
I feel the need to say the F word. Let's talk about the F word.
It's so good. It's so funny. So if you're super familiar with all the singles that were from Teenage Dream, but you aren't sure about some of the deep cuts from the album, I definitely recommend you hit play on Circle the Dream first. On the flip side, one of the songs from Teenage Dream does need to be chopped off, and pretty quickly and pretty unanimously, we agreed that Pearl needs to go.
Wake up, Pearl. Wake up.
For me, I don't really understand why this song is on the album. I get that it's a personal song and it has her granny's middle name, but conversely to Circle the Drain, which seems like it's trying to push the boat out, I feel like this is a very somber song in a very uplifting album. Or not necessarily uplifting, but sometimes songs like Circle the Drain are like a fuck you song, same as Part of Me and The One That Got Away. Like, we're talking about relationships, we're talking about the highs and lows, but for me, I don't really understand Pearl. I don't understand why it's on Teenage Dream, and I don't understand why Katie continually talks about it in interviews as quoting it as the crowning jewel of Teenage Dream.
I hear at the end of the song too, when she changes the lyrics to be like, from she used to be a pearl to I used to be a pearl.
Yeah, and then in interviews she says that the plot twist is that she's the pearl. I'm like, yeah, we heard the song.
I just think it's a bit of a snooze, to be honest.
Speaking of snooze, get ready to snooze through this sponsored ad break.
Next, she's my teenage dream. Hey, Katy Perry! Is that your fragrance?
It is. Would you like to try some?
No.
Okay.
Pussy, the new scent that'll make all the boys say, Hello, Kitty. Now available at your local Superdrug.
Hello to you all, and welcome back to the prestigious Snappy Awards. Now over to our hosts, Pete and Paul, for the first award, for the cringiest line.
The temptation to pull the plastic bag line here was like really, really hard to resist. And I've done it because Pearl does exist. I try to chop it off. It's still here. And there are two sets of lyrics that I just find to be cringy. The first one is, she could be a Statue of Liberty. She could be a Joan of Arc, but he's scared of the light that's inside of her. So he keeps her in the dark. Like, Joan of Arc was burned alive. For me, I think it's a bit weird to have the Statue of Liberty that's like holding a light to guide the way and then be like, you could also be on fire like Joan of Arc when she burned alive. I feel like it's a bit insensitive.
It's like, oh my God, time and place.
But it's combated with another line from Pearl that says, this love's too strong like mice and men, squeezing out the life that should be let in. Like, what in the English GCSE is she doing? Talking about Lenny strangling Curly's wife.
She was a whore because she wore red, though.
Yeah, like, he should have let the life in instead of squeezing it out, apparently. Like, I just find it very cringy. I don't really enjoy it. And, yeah, chop it off.
And now for the second award of the night, the weirdest fact.
For weirdest fact, you need to do a little bit of research yourself and go onto youtube.com, type in Katy Perry, Milk Milk Lemonade. Now, this is an unreleased song that was written at the same time that she was writing her Teenage Dream songs with Bonnie McKee. The lyrics read, milk, milk, lemonade, round the back where chocolate's made.
Milk, milk, lemonade, round the backs where chocolate's made.
Now, Paul tells me this is a reference from Will and Grace for the older gay community.
She was bringing it back for the newer culture and the new generation.
Whether this was seriously recorded as an actual song she wanted to put on or not is really up for debate, but you really need to listen to the song to know just how weird it sounds. It also seemingly features Will.i.am-esque vocals.
Yeah, like Will.i.am.
The awards just keep on coming. Now on to best live performance.
My ET bias really shows here, because at the 2012 Grammy Awards, which she doesn't win a Grammy for and never has.
And if you don't win, don't worry. I was never even nominated in this category. And I have my own eyelash line.
She does a mashup of E.T. and Part of Me, which is just released at the time. and it's amazing. I think because it is an ET performance without Kanye West, I like it a bit more too. Though I had considered putting her ET performance back in 2011 on American Idol, where she was dancing with what looks to be the Hag from Dead by Daylight, but his inclusion immediately chopped that, so had to go with this one. Her live vocals are definitely really good, like there was no saliva to be seen. She swallowed it, definitely in the break somewhere.
What is she wearing? It's time for the Ugliest Merch Award.
There is some ugly and smelly merch in this era, but for this section, I decided to choose this beautiful, cheap satin pinstripe varsity jacket with what looks to be either Natalia Kills or Kristen Ritter on the back with a pink splodge. I don't know, it was for the California Dreams tour in 2011 and it looks like it fell off the back of the van going to Primark.
Yeah, there's definitely a doppelganger in our midst here.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to state the obvious. We have a doppelganger in our midst.
I actually really am in my varsity jacket era. I wouldn't be picking this up.
Now for a new award for the Snappies. Alternative album title.
I think the Teenage Dream is a brilliant album name, as it sort of is all about romanticizing love, friendship, connections, living your dream. But I am going to throw out an alternative here. I would go with California Girl, G-I-R-L. Given that her previous album was called One of the Boys, I feel like there's good symmetry there. I feel like it's evolution. I feel like it's her being herself and giving representation to California, which is always good and nobody really has that. And it does feel like a fun summertime album as well. So I'll go for that one.
There's high fashion on the runway. What have we got for our final award? Best Luke?
I thought this was going to be a really easy category because in my head, the California Girls music video was full of iconic looks. But in reality, it is not. And the wigs are not human. So I went for this Queen of Candyland fantasy that is the inside cover of the album, where Katie actually has nice hair and makeup and is wearing a Candyland crown. She's dressed as like a bun wrapper that's inside out, or a cupcake wrapper for non-Northern Irish people. I just think she looks really pretty. It gives the fantasy that I thought the California Girls music video was going to give me. And she's got a big flump or something.
Yeah, she's got the flump to whip the girls down at Agra. No, she does have a big flump, definitely. What she's doing with the flump, I don't know. It does look like she's going to use it as like a wand to Avada Kedavra, Snoop Dogg in the video or something. Not sure. It's a serve.
Well, that concludes another iconic Snappies. Join us next week for more awards. Now back to the studio.
Wrapping up, no pun intended, our thoughts on Teenage Dream. We're going to start by saying, you know, this album sold a lot. It debuted at number one on the US Billboard 200, selling 192,000 copies in its first week, and is now certified 3x platinum, selling more than 3 million copies and charting within the top 40 of the Billboard 200 year-end chart 3 years in a row.
Following her successes, Katie then embarked on the California Dreams tour, beginning February 20th, 2011 in Portugal and concluding on January 22nd, 2012 in the Philippines. Over 124 nights, this raked her in over $59.5 million. And the generous queen stopped in Belfast, which no one does anymore, ever. But there was one shining light in the audience that night.
It was me, I was the firework. Like, halfway through the performance, my chest alighted.
Were you the overweight girl at the pool party?
I was the overweight girl, I was the magician, and I was not kissing men. Even though I wanted to, I was not.
You were eating a flump?
I have such an interesting story. At the tour, they had literal confections, like stands. Confection stands.
Complete.
Mine was only half full, it was £7. But they filled it with chocolate-covered strawberries with cream on the top.
Was it nice?
It was nice. It was refreshing. Yeah, it was really good. I've never had fruit at a concert before. I've been the fruit at the concert, but I've never ate it there. The show was really good. Like, I've seen Katie twice, you know, not to boast, but the Prism Tour as well. But the Teenage Dream Tour just had a special electricity to it. It was so, so good. Like, the visuals were really on par. I feel like her discography was at its tightest. She performed all the hits. She did ET and she like levitated in the air. It was amazing. I would love to go back and watch it again.
And you can watch it again as she released the Katy Perry Part of Me documentary on July 5th, 2012, following Katy through her California Dreams tour, while providing an insight into the singer's journey with stardom and detailing various aspects of her professional and personal life. The film has grossed nearly $33 million worldwide, making it the second highest grossing music concert film ever by a female artist. Probably the most well-known and poignant moment shows Katie crouched in a ball in her makeup chair, removing her wedding ring and crying in a depressive breakdown about her looming separation. At the last minute, Perry pulls herself together and promises her team she'll make it. We then see her getting ready at the trap door, fighting tears, and then breaking into a smile, just as she's cast up on stage to perform Teenage Dream. Now that is a woman in music. She said, "My life is completely falling apart, but there's a stadium of little boys, little girls, little theys, little thems who are ready and have waited so long to hear my songs," and she put everyone else before her. And that's really hard to do. And I think the reason why this is so well known is because everyone respects her for that.
This leads Katie on to her next album, Prism, which was released on October 18th, 2013, and is her third studio album. The album debuts atop the US Billboard 200 with 286,000 copies sold, over 90,000 more than Teenage Dream debuts with, and is her best opening week to date. And songs like Roar and Dark Horse, which both reached number one in America and number one and number four in the US respectively, show that she had no signs of slowing down after Teenage Dream. She looked to be solidifying herself as a princess of pop and at the upper echelon of the pop music industry. But then suddenly out of nowhere, everything started to go wrong for her career. She released two more albums, Witness in 2017 that did debut at number one, and Smile in 2020 at number five, but she's never reached the heights of Teenage Dream and Prism, and there definitely has been a narrative that her music is basic, cringy, and behind the times. It'll be interesting to see what style she decides to go for on her next studio album. After the release of Teenage Dream, it felt like everybody in the pop world was trying and failing to recreate its ability to pierce into pop culture, including Katie herself.
It is really strange to see because I think a lot of the pop girls have maintained their image or fan base even to current day. But Katie is such a specific outlier for this because everyone knows shitness is something that she hasn't pivoted from yet. I love Smile. No one else knows Smile as an album. It really felt like she did Teenage Dream, hit copy and paste, then tried something different and no one wanted it. But it is indisputable that Teenage Dream truly, truly had an impact.
And with that, Pete, I think it's time we wheel out, for the very first time, the indisputable impact iconometer.
Oh my God, and there she is.
She's bigger than I thought.
Much bigger. The indisputable impact iconometer is our brand new system of telling the gravity and scale of the impact that an album and era has had on pop culture. I'm going to start inputting the facts and figures we've collected from this episode, and the machine will reply with a percentage of overall impact.
Inputting and beep, boop, beep, and I want to see your peacock and buzz. Badipas fruity new, and do you ever feel like a plastic bag, 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 and output in process? Calculating and final result 92%.
Whoa, what a result for the first trial of this awesome machine. I mean, the sheer amount of critical acclaim the album got, as well as all six singles, as well as two additional singles from a repackaging, definitely being able to be recognised by anyone, gay, straight, anywhere in between or outside, cannot be forgotten. And the visuals are so clean and iconic. You know, whenever you think about Teenage Dream, you know the cover, you know the music videos, you know what the tits did.
Literally, I feel like she really grabbed the 2010s by the throat and became like the face of the decade. Unfortunately, I do feel like there were points deducted, so she's not getting 100% as she did not get a Grammy or any sort of major award for this era. And I think this was potentially her downfall with her trying to replicate this so much in Prism that she's just out of reach for that Grammy.
Very much like the scent of cotton candy on this beautiful packaged album, the smell and flavour of Teenage Dream doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
Thank you so, so much for tuning into the premiere episode of Snapped Season 2. As always, follow us along on our socials at SnapPod over on Instagram, where we post behind-the-scenes content and visuals of everything we've talked about in the episode. And don't forget to subscribe to Snapped on your favourite podcast streaming service to get notified when episodes release over the next 9, yes, you heard right, 9 weeks. You can even give us a glowing 5-star review if you're feeling particularly generous.
We can't wait to show you what's in store for our sophomore season. And don't forget, you can check out all of Snap Season 1 on your podcast provider. We've been your co-hosts. I'm Paul.
And I'm Pete.
And as always, keep those ears peeled for a quick sneak peek of next week's album at the end of this episode. We'll see you then.
Bye.